I'm going to introduce you now. Carly is an 18-year-old community college student from Folsom, California, currently pursuing law and sociology. She's an advocate for gender and racial equity, environmental justice, and immigration reform. Thank you so much for being here with me today, Carly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So I'm really excited to have this important conversation today about reproductive justice in the Biden-Harris era. Did you have a chance to watch the inauguration?
Yes, I woke up at 8 a.m. and immediately went downstairs. My whole family was sitting on the couch. It was like a huge thing just to go and watch this inauguration because history was made. We got to see the first ever woman, Black, and Asian American vice president get inaugurated. So we were all ready for it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I agree. I remember my first inauguration ceremony was Obama. And I remember sitting at the edge of my mom's bed as a little kid. My legs were dangling from the bed because I was so short. And I remember telling my mom that I wanted to be the president one day. And seeing Vice President Harris take the oath of office just instilled in me this power, this fire, telling me that, you know, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like me and my mom, we were both in tears, silently, of course. We were like, don't make a big show of it. But I knew for a fact, like, every little girl watching this is going to be permanently changed.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So I kind of wanted to dive in first by talking a little bit about the vice president's stance on reproductive justice and abortion services and how she kind of differs from Vice President Biden. So along with numerous other Democrats back when Kamala Harris was a senator, she pushed to repeal the Hyde Amendment. And for listeners who don't know what the Hyde Amendment is, it's a legislative provision that barred the use of federal funds basically to pay for abortion except to save the life of a woman or if the pregnancy arises from incest or rape. So during a July 2019 debate when Kamala was still, you know, on the campaign trail running for president, she told now President Biden, "You made a decision for years to withhold resources to poor women to reproductive health care, including women who were the victims of rape and incest. Do you now say that you have evolved and you regret that?" So as a young woman, how does this look to you that now President Biden changed his mind?
Well, it's a reflection of the cultural change, definitely, that has occurred within the Democratic Party and just American culture in general. So it's good to see that Biden has the ability to change his mind on things. It's still not okay to know that someone did actively try to withhold funding from basic reproductive freedom. However, it's refreshing to know that within the 2020 election cycle, he changed his mind and he decided, no, the Hyde Amendment is not something we need to keep. This is not something that we should have as legislature. We need to make reproductive freedom a basic part of healthcare. So it's kind of rough in the sense of he did actively go for the Hyde Amendment for a very long time. But it's good to know that I think in the new era, of Biden, we'll see a different stance on that piece of legislature.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think it's so unfortunate that the past 4 years we had a person who was leading this country that did not care what was happening at all. And it's not just America that's affected or just Americans. President Biden will revoke a policy which prevents foreign groups providing abortion services or counseling from receiving U.S. funding. So I know both of us do Model UN, and we have a history of talking a lot about these issues. So I wanted to talk about this on a global scale as well. So how do you think it looks now that President Biden will be making sure that women across the world will have access to essentially the my body, my choice idea?
Yeah, I think that's considered the Helms Amendment. I recently read up on it, and it's that idea of America is trying to withhold funding from foreign organizations, which is so kind of weird in the sense of, why are we meddling in individuals' rights to an abortion who don't even live in this country? But it's good to know that on a now more global scale, because America surprisingly isn't the center of the universe, despite American propaganda regularly leading individuals to that conclusion. It's good to know that we have a president who is telling on a global scale that no, abortion care is health care. This is not a privilege, this is a right. You know, women need to have the ability to family plan, and it's not just something a rich person can do or something very specific instances can do. It's basic health care. So it's good to know that we have a champion on a global scale, as well as just within the nation, that's going to fight for all women to have the right to an abortion.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. And I think it was really interesting because I remember one time I was prepping for a Model UN conference, and one of the topics was talking a lot about women's health and talking about contraceptive care. And a disturbing fact I came across was about 1 in 10 medical products that are circulating around in low and middle income countries is either substandard or falsified, meaning that a lot of the contraceptive care that women are receiving, such as in Ghana or Uganda or places that aren't highly developed, these women are taking contraceptive care not knowing that it's not going to help them. So how do you respond to the Republican argument, or someone who maybe doesn't agree with using contraceptive care or doesn't agree with the right of access to abortion, who says, well, you should be, people in developing countries should be, you know, using birth control. Why are they having so many children? How would you respond to that argument?
Well, the answer is it's a lack of education. You know, if we're not providing funding for safe contraceptive education and care, then the countries that are impoverished, they can't do that. And also in these countries, sometimes girls aren't allowed to go to school. So we can't hold women in these countries who don't have access to this very basic education that, oh, well, it's your fault. What? That's ridiculous. They didn't get to choose what kind of education they had or what kind of access they had. All they got to do was listen to somebody who they just hoped that this pill would work for them. No, you know, we need to provide funding for these countries because they need access to education. They need access to safe reproductive care. So anyone who gives that argument of, well, it's kind of their fault, like it's not our problem, that is so messed up. If you really care about these individuals' lives, then you need to understand that education and safe access will actually keep them alive.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's such an important fact that you bring up. And so many women and girls are barred from attending school because there's, like, the Taliban, for example, barred a lot of women from going to school. And other governmental organizations that aren't allowing women to become educated. So you have a lot of young women and girls out in the world who don't have access to educating themselves the way that we do. So it's our job to make sure that they know that they have the right to these products and to, to these concerns that they might have. So something that I wanted to talk about that really concerned me when then-President Trump pushed for the nomination of Judge Barrett, how do you think she will shift the court when it comes to not just abortion, but to contraceptive care and access to Planned Parenthood and all these important parts of a woman's life?
Yeah, definitely Judge Barrett is a huge concern. And also, she's not very consistent with virtually any message that she's put out. She's been a very staunch pro-life individual, but recently the court just voted to invoke the death penalty. So we know for a fact that she is not someone who's going to uphold previous legislation or previous stances of the court, and she's going to be an active anti-abortion individual. So I think in those kinds of situations, it's really good that we have a more liberal Congress and more liberal House, because ultimately the only way to ensure that we have protection for abortion and reproductive freedom is through the elections cycle and through legislation, because we know that the court is officially a conservative court and it's not going to uphold Roe v. Wade decisions. So that pathway of action has somewhat for abortion access. And so we have to go through other means to ensure that basic care is still upheld, which I think we can still do. Just because the House, the Senate, and the presidency are more reproductive freedom oriented. But it's definitely a big concern to know that the court can ultimately destroy certain decisions that are made by women. And it's very concerning.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you bring up that Amy Coney Barrett is a conservative. Well, the conservatives generally take a stance that they're against abortion. But as we know, the last few days of Trump's presidency, he pushed through with multiple executions, meaning that there were a lot of people on death row who sadly lost their lives, one being an innocent man, Dustin Higgs. And it's appalling to me that the conservatives condone that type of death. But when it comes to a woman who wants to end her pregnancy, it's immoral. What is your stance on that?
I mean, it's just a reflection of the hypocrisy within the Republican Party. They don't actually care about the life of a fetus. They care about controlling women. You know, when they see a black man on death row, it's his fault. He shouldn't have done that. It's something that he did. He put himself there. You know, and the government's just doing what they need to do. But the moment a woman goes, oh, I'm not going to continue with my pregnancy because of financial reasons, housing reasons, whatever, it's, you are a murderer, you're this, you're that. And it's like, hold on. We have an innocent man on death row that you decided to kill because he may have a criminal record. But a woman who decides to terminate a pregnancy, that's completely her choice, and this individual or this fetus isn't a person, you're going to tell her that she's a murderer? You don't get both. And unfortunately, the Republican Party has just continued to push this idea of, we get our way and you don't get to say anything about it.
Yeah, that's an extremely powerful statement, because it's very true. The hypocrisy is running rampant, especially under a Trump presidency. It was unfortunately just the worst, and so many people somehow lost their rights. I mean, we saw during the summer, it felt like our rights were slipping from us. We had a difficult time speaking up and out about certain issues. And I know we have had this conversation before. Living in conservative towns, you feel like you're under this pressure. You feel like you're being suppressed because there's certain things you cannot talk about, and everyone should have the right to talk about what they believe in, whether you're on the right, whether you're on the left, or you're in the middle. And the last question I want to get to, it's something that struck me kind of, it was a little bit interesting, and I was reading an article talking about Amy Coney Barrett. So she has support from many anti-abortion groups. She also signed an anti-abortion advertisement back in 2006, and she signed a letter that mentions, quote, the value of human life from conception to natural death. But she also said something that kind of contradicts this, which comes back to your statement about hypocrisy. She doesn't think judges should let their personal convictions cloud their decision-making when she has support from anti-abortion groups. Do you think that this clouds her judgment and therefore she should not be on the Supreme Court because of this?
Absolutely. Justice Barrett, she, I can't remember the specifics of her statement, but she has claimed, you know, God is my leader. He directs me in what I should be doing. That's not a justice of a democracy. That is an individual who is outdated. Her ideas about religion and life have been so completely very specific to her as an individual that she, as a justice, does not actually care about the protection of American people. She cares about the protection of what she thinks is right. Anytime you are a justice, you have to take into consideration context, historical decision making. You can't simply go, well, God directed me this way, so I think I should do this. We live in a country that has a separation between church and state. Her being this devout individual to God proves that she is not fit to be a justice of a democracy. Yeah, she's just ridiculous in my opinion.
I 100% agree with you. I think a lot of the times when we look at these justices, they're such distinguished people, and I just do not see that from her. She doesn't omit this distinguished feeling and look. I mean, you look at Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She is so powerful, and I remember when I was applying to college, I applied to Princeton, and I remember thinking, wow, like so many years ago, Justice Sotomayor was in the same position as me applying. Like, do I really deserve this, you know? And Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she, I mean, to fill her seat, you have to fill it with someone who is, you know, not equally powerful, because I don't even think there is anyone equally powerful as Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So the filling of that seat, I think, was just a mistake, and it was rushed. And the fact that we talked about hypocrisy and running rampant. The hypocrisy here is Republicans complained that the impeachment trials were rushed. The hearing of Amy Coney Barrett was rushed. The filling of that seat was rushed. So I just wanted to say that this conversation was so powerful, and I loved hearing your stance on all of this, and you are just making such a difference in the world. I thank you for being on here, and thank you to everyone who tuned in. We really appreciate it, and we cannot wait for the next episode.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you so much.